In our collective mind's eye, the battlefields of the Western Front from World War I are forever a grim wreck of mud, bodies, and heroism. But as we approach the centenary of the end of this war to end all wars, surely it's time to look at these places afresh, to see them through the eyes of contemporary artists, to combine history and present-day reality. That's the idea behind the Salient exhibition, where 12 Australian artists were taken to northern France and asked to respond to their experience through their art. Salient, as a military term, means a bulge in the line. So for soldiers inside the salient, around Ypres, they were surrounded on three sides. One of the most brutal of places in a universe of hell. Two of those artists join me now, the sculptor Harry Fascher and the photographer Paul Furman. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you, Harry.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Harry, how were the artists chosen?
Robert Linegar of King Street Gallery had done a previous expedition to Gallipoli in 15, again for the 100 years, and decided to pull together a group of artists from a variety of galleries to for their particular slants on the way they approach art, to again visit a substantial battlefield and make work to commemorate the 100th year this year.
So, Harry, did you have specific directions as the trip went on or before the trip started?
I really had no idea what I was in for, Ed. I had started doing some research on the Battle of Beersheba, which obviously wasn't in the Western Front. Mm. But I was on a steep learning curve, and the trip, the historian with us, the museums, and the landscape just opened up a whole new world of horror, really.
What time of year were you there?
In May.
Oh, okay. So you didn't have that full experience of the winter as well?
It was bloody cold.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was really, really, really cold. I was quite unprepared.
Oh, right. Well, that's actually really good to know that even in May it still would have been very cold. Wow.
Yes, we might have got a cold snap. It's interesting, isn't it, the cold? We were in the Wellington tunnels, and the story of all the soldiers down there for weeks and weeks and weeks on end before they went out into the snow to fight the battle, and they had to leave their greatcoats behind. Like, all that was left was coats and all their belongings, because obviously they weren't supposed to survive. Like, that attrition rate and the complete disregard for life is what struck me the most.
Yes, and the acceptance of that rate as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Paul, how did the trip progress? What was the sort of day-to-day routine that you 12 artists fell into?
Well, we settled in Peronne and Ypres, and then a bus would take us to the various sites. We had a historian with us who could cite everything at the particular battlefields, where things happened, who was where, what and the whole thing was coordinated by Robert Veal, who did an extraordinary job.
So you were there with your instruments of art. Harry, you took a sketchbook, is that correct?
I had a couple of sketchbooks and a whole lot of paper. I made some bigger en plein air drawings and filled probably two sketchbooks over the course of the 12 days.
And Paul, what did you have with you?
I took a variety of cameras. As a way into the discussion, I thought it would be interesting to use cameras that the soldiers would have recognised. So we're looking at a 30s Voigtlander collapsible camera, a box brownie from the, I believe it was the 40s, and I had a backup of a small digital camera.
Paul, how do you get film for those cameras these days? Can you still buy it?
Oh, in America you can buy anything. There are specialist people in Brooklyn who actually cut the film to suit a box brownie. Yes, you can still find it.
Yeah,
it's older equipment and methods of photographic production are becoming a bit of a novelty.
What an excellent idea, though, Paul, to take cameras of the time. that the soldiers would have known as well, perhaps, some of the soldiers?
Well, the idea was to have a way into the project, to have something that spoke to the time, and those sort of cameras and film was what would have been used at the time.
Now, Harry, can you describe the scene that is there now? Should we focus on one area? Because obviously the Western Front was hundreds of kilometres long. How about if we focus in the area around Ypres?
It's amazingly beautiful, sort of serene with these undertones of a dark past. I mean, it's manicured landscapes, farming landscapes, but without the age, no old trees. Like, you can imagine everything being torn to smithereens, so there's no old trees and green lushness, but with these haunting undertones of bodies and metal and under the ground that's still being dug up. And we actually found a shell. Ross Laurie nearly kicked a shell that we think could potentially be live beside one of the fields where we were looking for Ewan's ancestry.
Now, Paul, when I was having a little chat with you yesterday, you were also saying about the amount of live ammunition that's regularly on a day-to-day basis dug up. Can you tell me about that again?
Yes, I believe it's hundreds of tons a year. The bombardments were so incredibly solid. In one particular bombardment, in 24 hours, 1.25 million tons of shells were pitched at the German lines. Often, actually, to no effect, yes, because they had built large holding areas 30 metres underground. So the moment that held thousands of people along the line, so that a shell would come down, they'd all zip downstairs, and then the moment the shelling stopped, they'd be upstairs on their machine guns as the Australians advanced to their death.
Yes, of course. Now, Harry, you took your sketchbook, you sketched in fresh air on plein air. What did you end up producing from this trip?
Some of the drawings I made are on show. And I went back to the studio inspired by the two things, the material nature of war and the concrete bunkers that were destroyed, and you saw ripped up steel inside these bunker forms, which had been totally obliterated. Or they hadn't been obliterated, actually, but they'd been disturbed and cracked. And so it was those textures of the wire, the steel, the concrete that I took home with me, but also the horror that the horror and the impossible nature of it. Like, imagine fighting a war in thigh-deep mud. Like, how are you supposed to progress across a field? You know, it was just unimaginable.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of the duckboards, you know, falling off duckboards and being drowned in the mud, you know, it just... So those two things, the complete and utter horror and the holes that it left in communities throughout Europe and in Australia, just left me bewildered.
Now, Harry, you have a strong family connection to the war. Your great-uncle Alf, I believe?
Yes, my great-uncle Alf fought. He fought both in Gallipoli and in Egypt, and he's actually well decorated. He won a MC and a DSO for gallant leadership. But, you know, I believe that I think that's sort of the Australian way too, isn't it? To make spur of the moment decisions that capture a town or create some sort of stronghold, and that it's made spur of the moment, and anyone could have made it. You know, one person gets recognised, but there could be 100 others that have done equally gallant things. But yeah, Uncle Alf, he's a horseman in my family.
And you, Paul, you have strong connections, family connections to the war?
Yes, I lost a great uncle there. Basically out of university, a bit of training, made a lieutenant, dead a few weeks later.
Yes. Now, Paul, I understand that you saw your great-uncle's name on the very large memorial there on the Western Front.
Yes, the major British memorial, this huge structure. Yeah. Clifford Howard Lovelock.
Yes. That moment when you saw his name, Paul, and then and suddenly there his name is, it's carved in stone and in one of the biggest memorials in this area. How did you take that in?
Well, there's a slight shortness of breath. I mean, you just sort of, an intake of breath and a chill.
Yes. How does this experience resonate through your lives, both for both of you now, starting with you, Harry, as an artist, but also just in your day-to-day life?
I suppose I'm a lot more aware. Curiously, I made a very large sculpture last year, The Charge of Beersheba, and a lot of people come up to me and comment and have stories, like the opening that it's given to other people to have conversations and to tell me their family history has been incredible, the fact that so many people are affected by the war. But also I can't shake the resonance this experience has had in my work. It's definitely the last show that I had at King Street reflects the experience on the Western Front.
Yes, and I know, Harry, as well, that you're a highly trained equestrian, three-day eventer, with obviously very intimate knowledge of horses. So having all that knowledge of horses and knowing that the trauma also that the horses suffered must have been particularly terrible for you.
Well, there's that whole notion, isn't there, of lack of choice. Like they had no choice to be there, and they trusted their men and the men trusted the horses. You know, they relied on each other for survival. And I've named one of the sculptures that's in the show Their Screams Penetrate, because there was a story about the men being in the trenches in the Western Front and there being horses that had been hit and they were maimed and struggling and screaming, and how the screams that the men can tamper their screams and sort of bite a piece of steel, I suppose, and keep it a little bit more internal. But a horse, just the sound of the horse in pain, it was a guttural experience, and they had to get out of the trench and go into no man's land to put the animal out of its misery.
Yeah.
So those stories are just haunting.
Absolutely. Well, Harry and Paul, thank you both so much for coming in and talking about your experiences. Thank you for conveying the feelings of the Western Front for us now as contemporary viewers. And congratulations as well on your exhibition, Salient. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank very you. Kind.
Harry Fasher and Paul Furman, two artists who contributed to the Salient exhibition. It's on show from Sunday until February 2019 at the Anzac Memorial in Hyde Park, Sydney.